The 1970s saw steady growth in the number of women pursuing degrees in classically male-dominated fields, including computer science, which was trending towards parity with men before it suddenly reversed directions in the early 80s. This was not an isolated incident. Several other degrees saw drops or plateaus around the same time. The 80s as a whole saw a culture-wide pushback against the women's lib movements of the 60s and 70s. To quote Susan Faludi, by the end of the decade, 80 to 95% of women said they had suffered from job discrimination and unequal pay. Sex discrimination charges filed with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission rose nearly 25% in the Reagan years, and charges of general harassment directed at working women more than doubled. Many women were leaving tech because tech was becoming hostile towards them, but this morphed into the adage that women don't like computers and girls don't play games. But women have never been absent from computer science. Female programmers go all the way back to 1840, and before games were codified as an industry of men making products for boys, a number of female designers were household names. Feminist critique of gaming is as old as video games themselves. However, flesh and blood female presence in games and the cultural cachet of feminism in gaming discourse was steadily pushed out. For a sense of how things have changed, in Jordan Mechner's book on the creation of Prince of Persia, he speaks of a clash he had with Broderbund's marketing department, where they were troubled by how low-cut the princess's top was on the box art. In today's industry, it's sobering to think that, once, a marketing department might feel a game had too much cleavage on the box cover. If you want to better understand how the 80s dealt with feminism, you should read Faludi's book, but for our purposes, the takeaway is this. If our angry Jack came of age in that early 90s culture, around the time when Nintendo stopped marketing to families and started marketing to boys, or any of the quarter century since, it is quite possible that it wasn't until Anita Sarkeesian that he heard a feminist critique of games that he couldn't easily ignore. It wasn't new. But it was new to him. He'd heard rumblings before, sure, but they were all penned by games critics who occasionally wrote about feminism. Here was a feminist critic devoting her attention to games and getting paid for it, which was a different beast. Being raised on games as boys culture, Jack framed the every year increasing female presence in games as an intrusion from outside, instead of women reclaiming territory they used to occupy. He could make Sarkeesian the symbol of that intrusion and hang years of vague anxieties on her. To dissect the treatment of Anita Sarkeesian, we have to do a psych profile on Angry Jack. We have to understand Jack's relationship to himself. It is most useful not to think of Jack as a person. He's a condition similar to being drunk. He's the belligerent and dangerous asshole that some of us become when we feel our conception of ourselves as moral human beings is threatened. It's like having a patch of discolored skin on your arm that could mean you need to switch your laundry detergent, or it could mean you have skin cancer, and not desperately wanting to go to the doctor to find out. It's a perfectly human thing to do. We get to operate in this world as if we're healthy until someone tells us we're not, and we'd often rather worry that it might be cancer than to know that it is. And that's Jack's relationship to feminism, with Sarkeesian as the doctor. Jack's conception of a world where he's healthy is one in which sexism has largely been dealt with, where a misogynist is someone who beats his wife, and sexual assault is what happens in dark alleys with ski masks. The only way to deal with it is to shun, shame, or incarcerate the few remaining sexists. This often applies equally to Jack's understanding of other systemic social problems. To his mind, these are things he's not part of, or things he doesn't even believe exist. And he dutifully avoids anyone who might tell him different. Most of us who don't have phenomenally progressive parents grow up believing that this is the world, a world that, for all its flaws, is generally fair and just. And it's a beautiful world that most of us would rather live in, but it's an illusion. It's a bubble. And for most of the world that is not Jack, that bubble gets popped in adolescence or early adulthood, either by a traumatic event or a litany of microaggressions. For most, having the bubble popped is simply part of growing up. The ability to be a grown-ass adult and still believe that this is what sexism looks like is a predominantly male privilege. It's hard to read, for instance, Maddie Meyer's talk about getting manhandled by security guards at PAX, or not being taken seriously by men in the games industry if she wears a skirt, and still think that sexism begins and ends with battered women in ski masks. And Jack's solution for the discomfort he feels when reading these articles is, at least most of the time, not to read them. Misogyny doesn't happen to him, and it happens in front of him so infrequently, it's easy for him to write off as either isolated or inadmissible, and thus his bubble can be preserved well into adulthood. The thing about being a man in a world that favors men over women is that, with rare exception, nobody pops that bubble for you. You have to choose to pop it. People like Anita Sarkeesian present Jack with a world where his ability to get jobs, loans, and property has been amplified by his gender. A world in which he's been routinely given more than he deserves, even if what he has doesn't amount to much. A world whose problems he inherited from the past generation and has been contributing to his entire life. A world in which, however much things improve for women in his lifetime, he will profit off of institutional sexism until the day he dies. It's a world few of us want to live in. But Jack has the luxury of pretending he doesn't. What Sarkeesian tells him is that that thing he's been putting out of mind for years is real and can no longer be ignored. Many men face this choice, grit their teeth, and say, "Fuck it, let's just pop this thing." That's where allies come from. But Jack chooses his bubble. And I'm kind of furious that I can't make the obvious Matrix comparison here because Jack already staked a claim on it. Choosing your bubble isn't a real choice any more than not going to the doctor keeps you from having cancer. It's all about perception, about what Jack wants the world to feel like. He exists in the rarefied position where bigotry of all stripes exist as purely rhetorical abstractions. They're all just ideas to him, and he can pick and choose the ideas that make him most comfortable. All Jack needs is a reason for Anita Sarkeesian to be wrong. Or better yet, lying. The reason doesn't have to be good, it's purely utilitarian. It only needs to serve its purpose, to insist the doctor's a quack and justify getting a second opinion. This is why Sarkeesian's critics can't politely disagree with her. They have to treat her with contempt. The whole point is to spare themselves from actually considering her arguments, so her arguments have to be beneath consideration. The people who try to destroy Anita Sarkeesian are exceptional cases. Given their total lack of empathy and their inability to learn from failure, they may fit the profile for actual psychopathy. But most of Sarkeesian's detractors are not trying to destroy her, although they do want her gone. Jack is not a psychopath. Since his only understanding of how to deal with a sexist is shunning, shaming, or incarcerating, he reads any critique of his own gender politics as an appeal to shun, shame, or incarcerate him. He's a guy who's terrified of who he is if the world Sarkeesian describes is real, of how he'd be treated there, of what it would ask of him, of what his conscience would tell him to do. Jack is not a psychopath, but he will throw his lot in with psychopaths, with anyone who will tell him that world isn't real.